It must be quite apparent by this time to any thinking individual that the people of our country and people of other countries all over the world are coming to face a moment of grave decision. A time when we will choose the course of our future.
Oklahoma, Texas, New York, Philadelphia, around the world, it's going to be a big nut bust.
Welcome to the Millennial Media Offensive, episode 25. Today is Tuesday, June 14th, 2022. And coming to you from a pine forest in Mississippi, I'm your host, your one and only, John G. Dew. That's right, today Dan is out of the office. And the intro is going a little longer than I expected. That is okay. Dan is out of the office today. I'm doing a solo show, and let's go ahead and get it started. There's no need to chit-chat, no one to chit-chat with. Welcome to all the people in the troll room and anyone listening live. So, to get started today, I feel like the thing to do is to start with Patriot Front. There's been a lot, the prevailing idea, at least that I've seen online, is that Patriot Front is a federal operation. So, I don't necessarily think that's true. A police officer on the scene admitted that there are informants in Patriot Front, and that's how they were able to know what they knew about what was going on in Idaho. And I do have that clip, and I want to play it just so everyone can hear it. Because the leader of Patriot Front was arrested in Idaho. He was one of the 31 arrested. And you'll hear this officer use a different number. And I think what he says explains the difference in the 31 arrested and the number he uses.
Do you know what the original stop was for?
For that.
But how did you know?
We have informants.
Nice.
Okay, a little tough to hear because it is some guy recording on his cell phone, but the officer says, we have informants. Now, if you want to consider every group that is infiltrated by federal informants a federal organization, then congratulations. Every group around the country that has any influence at all is a federal organization. That's just the way it is. Any group that has anything more than a substantial local influence is going to be infiltrated by informants, either professional informants or just people who are disseminating information to informants about the group and its activities. So there is a documentary about Patriot Front. If you're unaware of Patriot Front and you want to know more about them, if you think they just came out of the blue, that's not quite accurate. They have been around for a little while. Media to Rise, which admittedly has close ties with Patriot Front, produced a two-part documentary called Sons of Our Founders. I didn't clip anything from it because it's an old documentary, but it really goes into why Patriot Front was founded and what some of their goals are or are stated to be. So, I mean, everyone's saying that, oh, they didn't take their backpacks off, or they didn't unmask them while they were detained. You can't guarantee that an officer or a group of officers is going to follow the exact same protocol for every detention of a suspect. And also, if the suspects aren't presenting as a threat, which I don't think Patriot Front would do, their goal is not to fight with police. I think they would comply pretty well, and I think the video evidence out there suggests that that's what they did. They complied the entire time throughout the arrests. The officers aren't going to be concerned with doing every little thing that would normally be done, especially when these members of Patriot Front have their hands tied behind their back and are complying with kneeling on the ground. So I would just encourage everyone to think about the fact that every group that is has any kind of influence is going to be infiltrated by informants. The police officer in the clip said that there were 33 people in the U-Haul and only 31 were arrested. And along with the ones that were arrested, Thomas Rousseau, who is the founder and leader of Patriot Front, was also arrested. So unless you think that this group is everyone involved, or at least the upper level membership, are agents of the federal government, that's fine and it's a possibility. I don't see that being the case. What I do see this as is a brilliant opportunity to split people who disagree with the federal government or think that the federal government is the boogeyman that it is, and paint a group that is trying to organize against it as an enemy of those who dislike the federal government or disagree with its actions. So I see this as a wedge, the federal government trying to drive a wedge between people who dislike it, and I think it's working. I think everyone out there, just because a group of people are organized to the point that they have uniforms and that they can march in a line and all seem somewhat fit, to a lot of people out there, that means you can't be trusted, and that's a sad state of things. So without belaboring the point, I wanted to cover Patriot Front to get going. I think there are more important things happening out there, and we're going to move on. We're going to go to Arizona and more generally the Southwest and the South. There have been some disruptions in the natural gas distribution system. The Arizona pipeline fire is one. I do have a couple of clips to play regarding that fire. So let's hear a TikToker and what she thinks caused the fire, what has been purported to be a potential cause for the fire.
So update on my family, pretty much all of Eastern Flagstaff, Super East is like completely evacuated. The whole entire face of the mountain on that side is on fire. This all started because a homeless man from Louisiana lit his toilet paper on fire because he didn't think that it would smolder all night. They let his name out. You sure should get out of Arizona, sir.
Okay, so nice threat there while your child is crying in the back seat. That's great. Just make more TikToks. This lady has been told, and it's widely reported, that this Louisiana vagrant was arrested, or detained at least. I don't believe he was charged, for fleeing the area of the fire, the initial area of the fire, and he told officials that he had burned some of his toilet paper and covered it with a rock and did not think that it would smolder overnight. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with toilet paper and burning it, but I don't know how much toilet paper he would have to cause a fire like this, or how dry it would have to be at the same time. But for that to happen, I would expect it to at least have to be a half a roll. I could be wrong. I've never had issues with burning toilet paper. But I think we have an actual clip of the... this is quite an old YouTube clip, so this could actually be the perp in this case. Back when he first started his YouTube career, that undoubtedly fell off now that he's traveling from Louisiana through Arizona and camping. But let's see if this may be the actual guy from the pipeline fire.
Looks like some toilet paper on fire!
Okay, probably not. But anyway, this pipeline fire is named the pipeline fire because it encompasses an area that features the eastbound and westbound tracks of the Trans-Western Pipeline, which connects in the west to the Southern California Gas Company natural gas line, runs through Albuquerque with spurs reaching south to Phoenix and north to Durango, Colorado, and then splits in Texas to reach north of Amarillo and south to Fort Stockton. Now, Fort Stockton is on the way to a major natural gas market hub in Quintana, I think is the way you pronounce it, maybe not, but in Quintana, Texas, there was an explosion at this market hub. So, let's hear about that.
And natural gas prices are soaring in Europe after this happened. Freeport LNG is one of the largest U.S. export plants for liquefied natural gas. It suffered an explosion at its Texas Gulf Coast facility. The plant accounts for about 20% of the company's processing. It's reported it will remain closed for at least 3 weeks. Traders are concerned lost U.S. shipments will add stress to the market already dealing with a cut in Russian supplies.
Okay, so European prices jumped 20% after that explosion, while U.S. prices fell 15%, which just tells you, it reinforces the fact that this was an exporting hub. And not only did you have the Quintana market, the hub explosion, but we've also got this pipeline fire. I would go out on a limb and say that the pipeline fire probably wasn't caused by maybe 3 or 4 wraps of toilet paper around some guy's hand that he subsequently set on fire. I'm not sure what might have caused it, but it seems to fall in line with these disruptions that we've been seeing in the gas supply. And that's really all the information I have on that. Let us move on. See if I have anything else in the U.S. Ah, yes, big story up in Montana. There is the opposite of a fire in Montana. There is major flooding. And I have a weather report here that's going to throw out some figures of just how bad the flooding is. This is a recent development over the past couple of days, but there are some rivers that are just absolutely raging beyond their usual shores, and they're pretty bad. There are videos of houses being swept away by the river, roads be crumbling over the river, and Yellowstone Park has, I believe, completely been shut down. So let's hear this weather report.
Finally, some atypical June-like weather. I'm Chief Meteorologist Mike Curry with an unmanned storm tracker forecast. It should be wet and cool in the month of June, and that's definitely what we're seeing, but it is causing some runoff issues. There are flood warnings out for the Gallatin River at Logan. Still expected to get to about 10 and a half feet here sometime Tuesday into Wednesday before dropping below flood stage later in the week. And upriver, you get near Big Sky and Gallatin Gateway, could get up to about 7.2 feet. That puts it in the moderate flood range for your Tuesday into Wednesday. A lot of runoff and lowland flooding, but the Yellowstone surpassed its all-time record. It's expected to get up to about 13.69 feet. Wow, that's crazy. But look how rapidly it should decrease in time. So hopefully by Wednesday, the river will drop back down below flood stage. And as you get towards the Livingston area, very impressive there as well, up to, 10.84 feet. Could get to 11.5 feet here in the next 24 hours. So lots of flood watches, warnings, and advisories. Let's zoom in on the Gallatin River. A flood warning basically from Big Sky all the way through Missouri Headwater State Park now through Thursday evening. And any river systems surrounding the Absaroka, Beartooth, Wilderness areas will be dealing with a lot of excessive runoff. And there's some impressive video coming out of that area, especially along the Yellowstone. So the storm that brought all this cool, wet weather is still here, but it's spinning its way up into northwestern Montana.
Okay. I would encourage you, if you haven't seen any of these videos, and I'm not sure how you would have not seen them, but if you haven't, go look at some of them. This is terrible flooding damage, and it's really something to behold. The river is really raging. Several rivers are. It's something I haven't seen in a while, so very interesting to look at those. And according to that weather report, the levels should subside soon. Let's hope so for everyone in Montana and Wyoming, parts of Wyoming. Okay, now I do have one more. This is going to be a bit of a change in speed here, but I have a story here about a transgender bishop resigning over allegations of racism. Yes, the racist transgender bishop in California. So you've got everything in this story. This story says a transgender Lutheran bishop in California resigned over allegations of racism from the congregation. And of course, I have the clip of the day that the congregation erupted toward the bishop. There is a pastor in this church, Nelson Gonzalez, and Pastor Gonzalez was removed from his post, and on the day that he was absent, you'll hear in the clip that it wasn't addressed prior to the service. So these parishioners show up, they're unaware that their pastor isn't going to be there. There's a woman who is conducting the service, and mid-service during some Catholic ritual, the congregation just starts yelling and asking, "Where is Pastor Gonzalez?" It's going to be a little bit long. I cut out a lot of it because the initial uproar is in English, and then it transitions to the whole congregation yelling in Spanish. But then we'll hear another clip from later in the altercation where it goes back to English. But let's go with the first one here.
Where is Pastor Nelson?
Mid-ceremony.
Where is Pastor Nelson?
I don't know.
He has put a lot of work into this community.
Yes.
And it's totally unfair.
This is not fair for this day.
Celebrate, he's not here.
Yeah.
Where is Pastor Nelson?
He did all this.
He did.
And where is him?
We are going to be talking about that after the service.
What?
We're
going to
finish
the service. There is injustice against Pastor Nelson.
Yes.
This is
I say nobody else comes back to this church.
This is not fair.
Sir, is
it okay? No, it's not. It's not fair to you.
This is another reason where if he did something wrong, that's fine. But if he hasn't done anything wrong, this is not the Christian way.
Okay, sir, can I speak? I'm going to invite the bishop to come up and speak.
We need answers.
Okay, let us speak, and then we can give you the answers.
Thank you.
Okay, so the bishop is the transgender bishop.
Everyone, that there has been a difficulty, and that I have brought pain, and...
It's not fair.
It's not fair.
You can find another day, but not this day.
All these words you hear today, remove it. There's something missing.
Yeah.
And that's Pastor Nelson.
We need your pastor, Pastor.
And you trust me. You're hearing kids. We want answers.
Tuvieron que tomar esa decisión justamente este día tan grande para nosotros.
Okay. You can hear everyone getting riled up. Now, this is a crazy piece of this that I hadn't seen yet, but as I'm reading this story, the story says Rohrer, who is the transgender bishop, had reportedly worn a bulletproof vest to the December 12th service announcing Gonzalez's removal and had threatened to call police on a pair of congregants, according to the AP. Now, that happened in December 12th. Since then, the congregation had been making a stink about it because they did not receive a satisfactory reason for why Pastor Nelson was removed, and they levied accusations of racism against the transgender bishop. And this is a female to male transgender person, resigned after those allegations were levied. I do have that second clip. Let's hear the when the uproar of the crowd goes from Spanish back to English. You'll actually hear someone say that he should say what he said in English.
Deberían de avergonzarse y tener mucha vergüenza, luteranos.
You guys should be ashamed of yourselves for the way that you guys have treated this man that has been with us from the beginning.
You guys.
He's working hard for us.
What you have today. Yes!
He
has been thrown!
No.
Big time.
Thank you so much.
Big stab. It's a big stab.
Tuvieron que escoger este día tan especial para la comunidad para demostrarnos el racismo que hay.
All right. So that's pretty much the end of that story. The bishop resigned. I'm not sure what will come of it, if they'll get their pastor back, but I found that quite entertaining. The transgender bishop didn't even really get to get a word in sideways unless they were one of the ones speaking Spanish in the 5 minutes that I cut out of people causing an uproar during the service. But entertaining. California, always good for a little bit of entertainment. Let's go to China. Let's go all the way around the world. And in China, well, actually the South China Sea, China has intercepted an Australian surveillance plane. So, in February, a PLA Navy ship directed a... Okay, this is something that happened before. But recently, a Chinese aircraft flew alongside an Australian surveillance plane, released flares, and navigated in front of the plane, and could have, well, the Australians and the United States are saying that it could have caused a major collision. I do have a clip. Let's hear about this dust up over the South China Sea.
The most serious confrontation yet. An RAAF P-8 surveillance aircraft intercepted by a Chinese J-16 fighter jet over the South China Sea 10 days ago. The Australian crew's lives put in mortal risk as the jet flew alongside, setting off flares, then accelerating, cutting across the P-8's nose and settling close in front.
It then released a bundle of chaff, which contains small pieces of aluminium, some of which were ingested into the engine of the P-8.
Military experts say that could have brought the Australian aircraft down. It was the third serious incident in several months after a Chinese warship turned its laser on a P-8 surveillance aircraft in February and a Chinese spy ship surveilled the West Australian coast last month.
Okay, so China causing a little bit of trouble in the South China Sea and that area of the Pacific. We'll have to keep an eye on that, see where that goes. Some Canadian planes also claim to have been harassed earlier in the month. So China really feeling their oats. We'll see if they take any action. They have said repeatedly that they would defend, well, not defend Taiwan, but would resist Taiwanese independence with force, with any means necessary. So maybe they're getting ready to see if we'll do anything about it. It would fit the mold for this year, really. Let's stay on that same sort of beat and talk about India. There's some strife in India as well. This is a story entitled "Targeting Killing of Minorities Puts Indian Kashmir Back on the Edge." If anyone has been following this, they'll know that the Kashmir region is a very tense region between Indians and Muslims. And Muslims constitute a majority of the population, but Kashmir is, I think, generally accepted to be under Indian control. Officials say the security situation has deteriorated in Kashmir, where 6 civilians, including a government clerk, a government teacher, a private wine shop employee, a TV artist, and a migrant worker have been killed in targeted attacks over the past 3 weeks. Grappling with the spate of killings, authorities have started posting employees belonging to minority communities, including Kashmiri Pandis, to safer locations within the alley. So Indians are quite a minority in Kashmir, I should say. And the Indian government is not taking too kindly to all of this that's going on in Kashmir. At least 19 civilians have been killed this year in targeted attacks in the region, with police blaming Pakistan-backed militant groups. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, Pakistan and India are not very good friends, and Pakistan has an interest in the Kashmir region. So that's more than likely is true to be one of the causes for these killings. Most of these victims were targeted at work. Let's see if there's anything else here interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go to this next part, where Indian officials demolish several houses after protest over anti-Islam remarks. Now, some Indian officials have said that Muhammad, the Muslim prophet, married an underage girl, and there's more to those comments, and I'm trying to get to an actual quote. Let's see. Muslims have taken to the streets across India in recent weeks to protest against the anti-Islamic comments by 2 members of Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist BJP, that is the Bharatiya Janata Party. Clashes have broken out between Muslims and Hindus, and in some cases between protesters and police in several areas. Police in Uttar Pradesh arrested more than 300 people in connection with the unrest. And this article, it's an MSN article, and it does not have the quote of what the Indian official said. That's disappointing. But heavy equipment was used to demolish the house of a Muslim man that Uttar Pradesh state authorities accuse of being involved in riots last week. In Prayagraj, India, on June 12th. You know, our Indian listeners should really write us and let us know how to pronounce these names. Modi has not commented. So, in India, if you're part of unrest, maybe these people were also cited for conspiracy to riot, and they had their houses torn down. So, a little bit worse than just being detained out of the back of the U-Haul. But this situation in Kashmir does not seem to be easing up. And the comments made by the members of Modi's government do not seem to be helping the situation at all. So I could see that devolving pretty quickly, especially if the theme of this year, which is just spiraling toward war, if the theme continues, this would be one of the major flashpoints of a conflict between Pakistan and India, which would be not very much fun to see. Now, speaking of another conflict, the original conflict of the year, the only update I have for the Ukraine and Russia region is that Putin was said to have compared himself to Peter the Great. Now, I have a clip, I believe. Let's see here. Where would that be? Actually, I don't have a clip. I decided it wasn't worth clipping because it was from CNN and it was absolute garbage. But if you watch the mainstream media, they're pretty much saying that Putin came out and said, I'm essentially Peter the Great. It's not exactly what he said. The actual quote during a... He was actually giving a talk to young Russian entrepreneurs, and I don't know if a question came up or if he just rambled to this point. But the quote is, and this is a conglomeration of quotes from a couple of different sources that I saw, but this is what I put together. Quote, "It seemed he was at war with Sweden," speaking of Peter the Great. "He took something from them. He did not take anything from them. It seemed when he was at war with Sweden, he took something from them. He did not take anything from them. He returned what was Russia's. When Peter the Great founded the new capital, no European country recognized it as Russia. The same goes for Western direction of his early campaign. The Battle of Narva. What was he doing? Redeeming and reinforcing. That's what he did. And it looks like it fell on us to redeem and reinforce as well." And that's the end of the quote. I could see how that could be taken to say, yeah, I'm essentially Peter the Great. But to outright say Putin said he was Peter the Great, I think is a bit misleading. I think it's definitely being used to bolster the idea that this is an imperialistic campaign. And, you know, that may be true. The original justification for liberating the Russian speakers in the Donbass area, it seems like that's where most of the military operation is focused. Anyone who would tell you that Kiev has been assaulted is a liar, from what I can see from all of the different sources that I'm following. There have been missile attacks on Kiev, and there was a large armored column, as everyone remembers, stationed north of Kiev, but Kiev itself was never assaulted. The closest thing to an assault of Kiev was the taking of the airfield north of Kiev, and to my strategic thinking, to the strategic part of my mind, that was so that Kiev wouldn't be able to throw their entire military might into the Donbass to resist Russia. So it could be both. Putin could have said that the liberating the Russian speakers of the Donbass region is a great opportunity to forward an imperialistic campaign, and he would have been right. It absolutely was a great opportunity, and the Russians are really starting to... It's becoming difficult. I'll put it this way. It's becoming difficult for the Western media to say the Ukrainians are really kicking Russia's tail. It's becoming more and more difficult to say that because Ukrainian resistance is crumbling. It's focused in major cities right now, and what you're seeing is the Mariupol situation where fighting was from city block to city block. You're seeing it play out in smaller cities in the exact same way. So you're seeing Russian forces move very slowly through the city to minimize casualties, and the Ukrainians just don't have the numbers to resist the modern day sieges that the Russians are laying on these cities. So Putin thinks he's Peter the Great, and this is going to continue. I mean, they're gonna take as much as they want to take, in my opinion, and it's really just a matter of how long the West generally is able to put up with this. I mean, the minute that the people of the West say, nope, enough is enough, this isn't worth it, I'm sorry, Zelensky, we tried, this is over. And it's over almost instantly. It would force Ukraine to the negotiating table, and Ukraine would have some, and Zelensky specifically, would have some very interesting words for the West. I'm sure we would be disparaged to no end, even though the United States alone has sent $50 billion of taxpayer money to Ukraine. But the Western assistance and the foreign mercenaries, to a lesser extent, are really the only things keeping Ukraine's war effort alive. So we'll see how long that support lasts. I don't see it ending anytime soon. But we'll see. We'll see how long it lasts, and we'll see if it lasts long enough to kick off any other conflicts around the world, like in the Kashmir region or the Taiwan area, which I hope it doesn't, but it sure seems to be trending that way every day. So let's see what else I have here. Oh, this is, I don't know if I want to do that yet. I think I'll keep that one for a little while. Let's see. Okay, let's go with this one. Let's go to Ohio. And this is a story about an Ohio teen, Ethan Liming, who was beat to death outside of the I Promise School, which was founded by LeBron James. Now, LeBron James had nothing to do with this, but, you know, who am I to pass up a good opportunity to jab at LeBron James? So this Ohio teen, Ethan Liming, was beat to death, and I have a clip reporting the murder.
Just last week, 17-year-old Ethan Liming was found beaten to death in Akron, Ohio. As of now, his murder remains unsolved. This summer, Ethan was getting ready to start his senior year at Firestone Learning Community Center. Last Thursday, on June 2nd, he spent the night driving around his hometown with a group of three friends. It was around 10:30 p.m. when the boys pulled into the I Promise School and began to shoot a toy water gun at another group of males playing on the basketball courts. As confirmed by surveillance footage, this led to a confrontation and ultimately the brutal assault of Ethan Liming. Police were called to the scene within minutes, and Ethan was found unresponsive with severe injuries. He was pronounced dead at 11:05 p.m. with blunt force trauma as the official cause of death. The police department has said that the suspects ran, but they've since collected the toy gun surveillance footage and other evidence from the scene. They've said the murder was not justified, and they're looking for three African-American males as suspects.
Okay, so Ethan Liming and his friends, who seemingly completely abandoned him in this conflict, they were shooting a toy water gun, which I guess every water gun is a toy, unless it's attached to a fire truck. But they were shooting three guys outside of this I Promise School with a water gun. The three guys did not like it very much and commenced to beat on Ethan Liming. I don't know where his friends were and why they weren't also being beat on, or at least trying to help their friend, but they didn't seem to be around, or didn't seem to receive any physical injuries from these three guys that were assaulted with the water gun. But I mean, you have to think. You're riding around, you're a teenager, you want to have some fun, so you're going to go over to the I Promise School, and you're going to shoot some people with the water gun late at night. You have to imagine they're going to get upset, but you're having fun, and that's fine. So you go over there and you shoot these guys with the water gun, and they take it more hard than you thought they would. I mean, they're really upset. You've hurt their pride, and they're very upset. They're ready to fight. So there's three of you and three of them. Now, there was a 911 call from one of Ethan Liming's friends, so they were there the whole time. But you're shooting these guys with the water gun. They get really upset, and they come over, and they want to fight. Okay, so you fight. Hopefully, all three of your friends are fighting all three of them, but that may not have been the case here. It could have been the case, but only one of your friends... excuse me, only one of your friends was hurt badly, and quite badly. I'm curious as to how that happens. I'm also curious about this in conjunction with this new medical condition we're seeing of adult sudden death syndrome, because it seems like if young people are dying in their sleep, as I've seen some stories purport, then just a little bit of trauma, like a good uppercut or being knocked out in any way, could absolutely bring on this condition, this syndrome. And as a matter of fact, in the 911 clip, the 911 audio, which I didn't clip because it wasn't very clean, you can hear one of the guys, and I assume this is one of the guys who was shot with the water gun, saying, "I'm sorry, we didn't mean to do that." And that's all you hear out of him. But it seems to me that what probably happened is this group of guys that were shot with the water gun got really upset about it. They come over, they want to fight. In my mind, that's all okay. You sort of had to expect that. You're going around at night shooting other guys close to your age with a water gun. They're probably going to want to fight you if you stick around, at least. They come over. Ethan Liming is probably a little mouthy, and he gets popped. And when he gets popped, that's just enough trauma to cause this sudden death syndrome. And my point again is that if you have kids that are dying in their sleep and it's being attributed to this, a punch to the face will be more than enough to bring this on. So that seems like what happened here, given the facts that Ethan Liming died, his friends weren't injured at all, and stuck around until after they made the 911 call. So when Ethan Liming got knocked out, the three guys probably thought, wow, well, that was kind of easy and it's over. Well, that was kind of easy. And two, okay, now it's over. We taught them a lesson. The other two guys don't want to fight. And then they realized that Ethan Liming was not okay. He wasn't just knocked out. So I do have an update sharing that these three guys were arrested.
We have a huge update in the murder of Ethan Liming. Yesterday morning on June 11th, police arrested 19-year-old Tyler Stafford, 20-year-old Deshaun Stafford, and 21-year-old Donovan Jones in connection to Ethan's murder. Reportedly, Tyler and Deshaun are brothers, and Donovan is their older cousin.
Okay, so these three guys were arrested, and unfortunately, they're going to be charged with murder. And I know that in the past, there have always been cases of someone punching someone else in an altercation and you hit them just right and they die. I mean, it's a real thing that you can hit someone hard enough that they die, and just right most of the time. And that could be the case here. But it just seems a little fishy with all the other things that are happening. When you have kids dying in their sleep, that you also have this happen where it's not a brawl between three guys and three guys. It seems like one of the guys was hit and he died from it. So sad story out of Ohio. Unfortunately, I do... At the same time that you shouldn't be too upset over being shot with a water gun. I mean, it is disrespectful to be shot with a water gun. But at the same time, you know, it's unfortunate. Any time that there's a fight and someone dies from a punch, it's unfortunate because you have people that could are just standing up for themselves, and now they, whether it be the guy in the bar who punches someone and it kills them, or these three guys who were just standing up for themselves after being shot with a water gun, even though it doesn't really justify much standing up for yourself, now they're all going to be charged with murder, or at least one of them is, and they're all three going to be charged to some degree. So just unfortunate all around. It's sad that Ethan Liming died. It's sad that his friends couldn't help him, and it's sad that these three guys are now going to have their life completely thrown off track because of this. So moral of the story, I guess I would say, is don't be so upset if someone doesn't hurt you but just embarrasses you a little bit, and just remember that people are dying in their sleep, so just a little bit of force may cause something that you don't intend at all. But onward. Spent a lot of time on that one. I have some news on the predictive modeling front. There is a computer model being deployed in Los Angeles. Now, I was appalled when I saw this this headline, and the story is even better. Headline, a computer model predicts who will become homeless in L.A., then workers step in. So this is a, it's framed like a personal interest story. It talks about Marshawn Cross, who received a phone call from someone that she did not know. And at the time she wasn't working because of her ailing back and knees, was scraping by on $200 a month in aid plus whatever she could make from recycling bottles and cans. Her gas and electric bills were chewing up her checks. She had been in and out of the emergency room. Her doctor said she might have to get a colostomy bag, and depression was bedeviling her day by day. This talks about how she received this call because of those factors. And eventually Cross says, of course, I feel like I've got a friend right here. Occasionally growing teary as she exalted the caseworker who had kept coming through for her. How did you get my name to start with? Cross asked. The answer is unusual mobilization of data analysis to try to head off homelessness before it starts. Cross is part of a rare effort by LA County to marry predictive modeling, a tool used to forecast events by tracking patterns in current and historical data, with the deeply personal work of homelessness prevention. The county found Cross and scores of other people through a predictive tool developed by UCLA researchers, which pulls data from 8 LA county agencies to help outreach workers focus their attention and assistance on people believed to be at gravest risk of losing their homes. Okay, so not only is your data being sold, not only is your data being sold to marketers, but now, and I'm really curious as to whether or not the social workers are having to purchase that data. I would guess that they are, and that taxpayer dollars are being used to purchase data to, well, there's no two ways about it. This is spying on people to try to help them. The good that's trying to be done here, I'm not sure that it's worth the privacy implications, but I know that most people would see it and say, oh, well, this is doing something good with a system that already exists. And that's true. The system already exists, and the data collection system and the ability to purchase this data exists. My biggest question is, why would you not put those resources into helping those that are already homeless? So you're purchasing data, and then you're using manpower to go out and contact people and then help them in some way. So why not give these resources to the people that are already homeless? I understand the strategy of trying to stem the tide a little bit, but I don't think LA has their homeless problem under control. So it would be my opinion that getting it under control would be the best route, and then potentially using this. I'm not comfortable with the implications of, it's great that the government or these government workers see people who are on the brink and then step in to help, and if they can help, great. But at the same time, how many people are they surveilling through their data that don't need help? And what's to stop a government office from purchasing data on all of the people in their precinct and saying that, we're only looking for people who are at risk for becoming homeless, but in reality, you have a huge data set on every person in your precinct, and for whatever reason, whether it be an employee who just is curious about someone they know, or a government-led inquiry, whether it be criminal or civil, just tapping into this data. You wouldn't need a warrant to do it. As far as I know, these aid workers aren't getting warrants to look at these people's data because it is publicly traded data. This is data that is compiled by companies, as we've discussed on the Millennial Media Offensive before, and it is open to purchase. So we're really starting to see the evolution of this public data structure and the availability of this data. And it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes, because nothing's going to be private. You're going to have to really work to make something private, and there are ways to limit the amount of data that's available to be purchased. But most people, the average person out there who isn't aware of this, and of course the listeners of the Millennial Media Offensive are not the average person. They are quite well informed on these issues. But the average person out there is going to have no idea that, one, their data is available for purchase to anyone who can pay for it, and two, that the government officials in their precinct have this data and have it readily available for any use, for any reason. So something should probably be done on making this well known, and I think that's happening just organically, because you have these stories that are coming out of, hey, we're doing this good thing, but here's how we did it. So you have more and more people becoming aware of what's happening and how it's happening, but I can't imagine there's going to be any public impetus to stop this, especially when most of the stories that get legs are these kinds of stories where, hey, this data was used for something good, and we saved someone from becoming homeless. That's the bend that you'll really start to see become more and more published in this realm, just because so many people are reliant on this data. It supports an entire industry, and the police are incredibly reliant on it. This keeps police from having to apply for warrants, and it's really an informational goldmine for police departments and any other kind of enforcement-based government system. So, great news, everyone. That this isn't going to end anytime soon, and I think it would be quite difficult to get a majority of the public to say, this is a bad idea and you shouldn't be doing it. And then even if you do get that sentiment in the public, what power do they have over a private organization collecting data and selling that data? You could try to lobby police departments to commit that they wouldn't purchase that data, but you go ahead and trust that they won't purchase it, even if you get them to make that commitment. That wouldn't make me comfortable in the least bit.
Millennial Media. offensive.
So as some of you know, the millennial media offensive is a value for value production. We rely on listener support to keep doing this program. And when I say we, I mean my co-host Dan and I. This is a solo show for me. Most other shows aren't like this at all. It's Dan and I bantering back and forth over the clips that we bring. The preferred format, and maybe that's just because I don't have much experience with doing a solo show. But Dan is out this week, and it's just me. I'm John, and I'm the sole host this week. But regardless of who's available to do the show, this is a value for value production. We split all of the value right down the middle, and we appreciate everyone's support. Now, with a value for value model, we accept monetary value. So if you listen to the show and you get some value out of it, put a number on what your time is worth and send that to us. We do have a PayPal where you can send us donations, and you can find that at mmo.show/donate. We also have a P.O. Box where you can send us physical checks. That is P.O. Box 2792, Denver, Colorado, 80201. We also accept Boosts and Bitcoin micropayments through the Fountain app. So if you are familiar with Podcasting 2.0 and you're familiar with the micropayment system, we accept those donations. And if you're not familiar with it, the Lightning Network sits on top of the Bitcoin blockchain and reduces fees for Bitcoin transactions and allows for tiny, tiny payments in Bitcoin to be traded back and forth in open channels between users. And we have an open channel, and you can send us value in that open channel as we do the show live, or even after the fact, whenever you want to. You can also, I believe, set an amount that you would like to donate per minute listened. So if you don't listen to the whole show, you can set an amount, listen to what you can listen to, and then we'll receive that value for what you have listened to. You don't have to pay for the whole show. You just pay for what you listen to. So those are the three ways that you can send us monetary value, and we do very much appreciate all of the monetary support. We would like for this program to be a sustaining program, or a listener-sustained program, and we will never take ads. If we don't get enough support, that'll just be the end of the show, and it was a good effort. We'll never take ads. That's not what we're here to do. Because anytime you take ads, as we've discussed several times on the show, and we've identified this in mainstream media clips, anytime you take ads, you're subject to oversight from the ad company. They want their ads to be positioned with a product that gives their ad a good name. It's about the reputation for the brand, and it's about a brand safe environment. And we're pretty proud here that we don't provide a brand safe environment, and that we talk about whatever we think needs to be talked about. And you know, if I were getting donations from, if I were running ads for a survival food company that was very far to the right and conservative, they might take issue with me saying that the Proud Boys aren't necessarily a federal organization, and that they've just been infiltrated like any organization with any clout gets infiltrated. And I don't have to worry about that here. All I have to worry about is being berated by the trolls in our troll room for saying that, because they all believe that Patriot Front is a complete federal organization. And if you want to join them and join in the criticism of the takes here, or the takes for any episode that airs live every Tuesday at 6:30 Eastern Time PM. You can join them at mmo.show/chat. It's a good time. You will get to troll along as we do the show. And if you want to listen live before you join the chat, which is probably a good idea, you can go to listen.mmo.show. So go to listen.mmo.show every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and also join the chat at mmo.show/chat. Now, that provides a little bit of value, because if there's some word that I can't think of or some fact that I can't think of, and I'm really just stalling out here, then the trolls in the troll room may say, hey, this is what you're looking for, or this is what you're thinking of, or this is the person you're thinking of, or you got that name wrong, or this isn't how you pronounce that Indian city at all. Which no one was able to help with. But aside from the troll room and providing a bit of value there, we also accept art for our episodes. And if you want to submit art, if you are good at creating art, you can send your submissions to john@mmo.show. Or you can send them to dan@mmo.show. Ideally, copy us both so we can both look at it and we can judge it and decide if we can use it anywhere. If you want to include a show number, that's fine. We would suggest that you include a show number and submit one piece without the show number, just because we don't have an art generator system so that we can see your piece right away. If you can get us the piece the same night as the broadcast and it has the show number, that's great. We'll probably use it. But if not, if you just want to do some art on the side and send it our way, we are more than happy to take a look at it. And if it's acceptable and good, we will most definitely use it. And I'm pretty sure we can even go back and change some of our other covers or episode arts. So if you go back and you listen to an old show and you're reeling in the years and you're just enjoying some of the old content we've put out, and you say, wow, this would be a really good idea for a piece of art, do that art, send it to us, tell us what episode you think it would be good for, and we can get that changed, we can get it updated so that art shows, and it just helps our product stand out more, so that when people are going through the app store or what the podcast store or whatever they use for podcasts, and they see that each episode has a different piece of art as the thumbnail, that's only going to drive intrigue and bring more people to the show, which we want. We love everyone who's here, but we do want more people to join the offensive. And I think I have covered everything that needs to be covered in the break. I see the troll room is kind of active. Is there anything else that you all think I should cover for the break? I don't think there is. There's a little bit of a delay. This is my first time broadcasting live alone, and I realized how much latency there is between what I say here into the mic and what actually comes through on the stream. So I'm doing a little bit of filibustering here to see if there's anything else I should mention. It is about a 10-second delay. I didn't time it earlier. Cotton Gin in the coal room, the coal room. Maybe we should call the troll room the coal mine. There's about a 10-second delay, and it does feel like an eternity on a live show. Sharky says, don't forget the part where if you donate, you'll be put on a list. That is sort of true, Sharky. We keep a list here. We keep an account of who donates and how much they've donated, because we will be assigning titles at some point when we get a recognition system dreamed up and put into place, but not currently. And we don't sell that list. We don't sell your information. Obviously, we don't have much information. Here's this pseudonym, and they donated this much money to our show. But no, we keep the list internally. Dan has fairly good operational security practices, I think. So you don't have to worry about the list you get put on. This is contrary to troll room belief. This is not a federal operation. We are not big enough to have been infiltrated yet, I don't think. And if there is a federal agent out there listening, you probably got a good chuckle out of that. But no, we don't publish anyone's data. We only appreciate it. We appreciate your donations. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you being here for the shows. And we appreciate you getting out and telling people about the show. You know, any good offensive continuously recruits new members. So go out there, tell people about the show. We can only benefit from having more people. And if the feds listen, maybe we'll convert a few of them.
Get it on!
All right, second half of the solo show. I'm going to try to slow it down a little bit. I feel like I've been rushing through everything I've done. And I don't know why I do that. Sometimes I get a little nervous. I start to rush things. And I don't want to do that. I want to produce a nice, easygoing show. So let's slow it down a little bit. I do want to get a good laugh out of something that happened with these January 6th hearings. For anyone who doesn't know, the January 6th Select Committee from the House of Representatives has been hosting public show trials about what happened on January 6th and how the Orange Man orchestrated all of it. Complete bust. I tried to clip it. I actually watched the entire first hearing, the prime time hearing, and it was a complete bust. Nothing but allegations and nothing but empty promises. And, you know, I can't say that they're empty yet because they do have several more to go. But I will say that for the first hearing, I did live tweet a bunch of it, and you can find the MMO Twitter at, well, if I can spell Twitter correctly in my browser, I will tell you what our Twitter handle is. Our Twitter handle is at RealMMOShow, RealMMOShow. For all of the other hearings, I'm going to do my best to watch those and live tweet them as well. So if you want to follow along with those, just follow the Real MMO Show Twitter and you will be kept up to speed. There were some pretty funny moments where the committee was expecting there to be these big, I mean, you just get the feeling watching it that everything that's covered or that is presented should be this bombshell, and it's all just information we've already known that's been recycled. A good example is where there was a question to the documentary filmmaker who was a witness who had been subpoenaed. He even mentioned, you know, I'm here because I was subpoenaed. But the chairman of the committee asks, when the Proud Boys went back down the hill, did a larger crowd start together? And he's talking about to gather. And he's talking about after the Proud Boys had walked around and really taken a look at the defenses around the Capitol, did a larger crowd start to gather? And the answer was, no, we went to lunch. We went for tacos. And when you hear something like that in a trial, not a trial, but in a hearing that's supposed to be this very serious and, you know, democracy was almost lost. You hear someone mention, or you hear someone think it's important to say that we went for tacos. I got a kick out of that. Another piece, and this is from the same guy, the documentary filmmaker, last name is Quested. The committee chairman is asking about what happened the night before January 6th when the filmmaker was with Tario, the leader of the Proud Boys. And the filmmaker responds and says, we picked him up from jail. He had been accused of burning the BLM flag, and we met up with some other Oath Keepers. We filmed Tario. We followed him to a hotel where we conducted an interview for our production. And then after that, the filmmaker says, we returned to D.C. D.C. was more busy than any other time we've been here, and because of that, our hotel was not satisfactory. So just throwing in little things like that, it almost makes me think that the filmmaker was trying to delegitimize in some small way this hearing, which would be easy to do because, as I mentioned, it was a complete bust. There was no new information, only new testimony from a Capitol Hill police officer, which at one point she mentions slipping in the blood of other police officers, which is absolutely something that can't be proven. None of the videos that I've seen from the day, and I've watched a lot of them, there wasn't blood on the ground. If anything, there's the amount of blood you get on the ground from breaking someone's nose, which isn't that much. It's not enough. I mean, you could slip in it in theory, but her answer, her portrayal of this was as if she were ankle deep in a bloody battlefield. And it struck me as not presented in good faith, and nothing more than a show trial, something to rile up the base and really show Democratic, hardcore Democratic voters that this is what almost happened. This is what Orange Man, this is the result of Orange Man. And we can't let his brand of politics win. We can't let his wing of the Republican Party win. We can't let Republicans win at all. You gotta vote Democrat. You gotta go out. You gotta save us in the midterms this November. And I think that's gonna be essentially what happens through all of these hearings. But at one point, to get around to Trump, at one point the committee brought up testimony from Ivanka Trump, where they were trying to juxtapose Ivanka's testimony that she trusted Bill Barr's conclusion about the election against Trump, who said Bill Barr was an idiot for not believing or not seeing the election fraud. And this is going to be a clip of someone reading Trump's Truth Social message after they used Ivanka's testimony.
Okay, so here's how the former president reacted today on his social network, quoting now, Ivanka Trump was not involved in looking at or studying election results. She had long since checked out and was, in my opinion, only trying to be respectful to Bill Barr and his position as attorney general. Parenthetically, he sucked.
Classic Trump. And I miss Trump on Twitter. And the media misses Trump too. They had their moment in the sun, relatively speaking, when Trump was president. I mean, they were able to hold themselves up as defenders of democracy. And now they couldn't be more desperate for something like Trump or for someone like Trump to give their lives meaning again. And it's quite sad to see when you see a CNN anchor reading a Truth Social post because they're that desperate for the Orange Man's reaction and the Orange Man's take on things so that they can So they can say, look at how bad this guy is and look at how good we are for telling you how bad he is. It's quite pathetic. And the January 6th hearing that's happening is no less pathetic than that media landscape. Now, to stay on the media landscape beat, a little bit of celebrity gossip here. Rebel Wilson was outed as gay, I guess. Lesbian? One of the two. Lesbian or gay. She's either an L or a G, as far as we know. But the Sydney Morning Herald was accused of outing Rebel Wilson by providing her 2 days to respond to the allegations that she had a new girlfriend. Now, there were a lot of aghast liberals on Twitter over this. Not Twitter. Well, probably Twitter. But TikTok especially. Nothing really clippable, unfortunately. But a Sydney Morning Herald columnist wrote a piece about Rebel Wilson having a new girlfriend, and they wrote or they emailed Rebel Wilson's representatives and said, hey, we're going to write this piece. You've got 2 days to comment. And the people on TikTok, the libs of TikTok, were absolutely outraged by this. How dare you? How dare you out Rebel Wilson during Gay Pride Month? And the entire time I'm reading this, I can't help but think, and it's not an Australian newspaper that did this, but let's go ahead and just admit that the journalistic industry is a monolith, especially the mainstream journalistic industry. And I can't help but think about way back in the day, I mean, a few years ago, maybe not even, the Washington Post and the New York Times published 93,000 people's information for donating to the Canadian trucker convoy. Now, most of those were private individuals. Some of them were CEOs, but most of them were, for the lack of argument, nobodies. And it's well understood in journalistic ethics that celebrities and political figures enjoy a lower standard for privacy regardless of their sexual preference. You don't get a different standard of privacy because of who you prefer to go to bed with at night. So this outrage over Rebel Wilson, the op-ed about Rebel Wilson's girlfriend, is absolutely ridiculous. It's entertaining. There's no doubt about that. But just a hypocritical response. And that's really all it is. It's just grossly hypocritical to say that a private citizen should have their information posted in a journalistic piece because of their political affiliations, but because of their sexual affiliations, a celebrity shouldn't have their personal information posted or be written about in any way. And you know, I don't understand the fascination with Rebel Wilson. Not extremely attractive to me. Sure, talented. I never really enjoyed her movies, but yeah, I don't see it. So it's just hypocritical, and it's proving that the journalistic industry really doesn't have very much loyalty. If there's a juicy story, it doesn't matter who it's about. Now, they can be more vicious towards certain individuals or toward certain groups, but when it comes down to it, they're not going to give anyone a pass if they've got a chance to write a juicy story. And a major celebrity being gay in Gay Pride Month is a major story. Sorry. So, yep, there you have it. Rebel Wilson, outed. She likes girls. She kissed a girl. She liked it. And Now she's up. I don't know if she's upset, but her followers are way upset that she was, and they like to use the term blackmailed. They like to say she was blackmailed into coming out. What did the Sydney Morning Herald want in return for this information that she had a girlfriend? They don't answer that because they don't know what blackmail is. But anyway, moving on, out of Australia, preferably. Let's see where we can go next. The police have more podcasts than I thought, honestly. I saw this story about, let's see here, let me get it open. Police Department's podcast aims to solve cold cases. So I saw this and I thought, wow, everyone really does have a podcast. But this is the Anne Arundel County Police Department where this podcast has been created to try to solve cold cases. And they're getting into true crime podcasting and using the details of cold cases to try to search for leads. So my question with this, and I started looking into this, and there are so many police podcasts, and I narrowed it down to podcasts where I could find images from the production where the police are wearing uniforms and performing the podcast. And I found Louisville, Kentucky, Amarillo, Texas, and the one from Maryland, Annapolis, or the Anne Arundel County Police Department. These people, these police are wearing police uniforms, which means they are currently being paid by the taxpayers, and they are doing a podcast. So, I would love for someone out there to write me, john@mmo.show, and tell me just exactly how doing a podcast falls under protect and serve. No one? No? I didn't think so. This is complete and utter crap, and it just speaks to the lack of accountability that police departments have, and especially these large police departments in large cities where they're just flush with cash. No matter what they tell you, they're flush with cash. And they have a lot of time on their hands. I wonder what the murder rate's like in Louisville. I wonder what the murder rate is like. Well, Amarillo, Texas probably ain't that bad. But I think the murder rate in Louisville is probably the worst of those three between the Annapolis area, Amarillo, and Louisville. It would be very, very funny to see that the Chicago Police Department has a podcast. And if they don't already have one, I would bet that within 6 months they will have one. So just a very sad headline to realize that these police, they don't respect the taxpayer. They don't respect the people they're supposed to protect and serve at all in the slightest. And that could be subconscious for a lot of them. A lot of them could go home and tell themselves in the mirror, I love the taxpayer and I fully respect the taxpayer. But whenever you're a member of an organization, of a police department that uses its resources that come expressly from taxpayer dollars for things like doing a podcast, you're lying to yourself. You don't respect the taxpayer. You don't respect yourself. You are a taxpayer. But, you know, just keep on buying military-grade weapons and doing podcasts about it. That's the state of American police. So, moving on. I can't really think of anything else to rant about there. I think I got my point across. Let's see here. I want to dive down into some of these more obscure links I have. There is a bit of outrage in China. Oh, well, never mind about that one. Let's see. Let's go. Some baby formula did arrive from Australia. I have a figure of 190,000 pounds of baby formula landed in the U.S. on Sunday. Prince William was seen on the streets of London handing out a newspaper printed and produced by the homeless population, and was rightly praised for doing that. It was claimed that it was an act of silent kindness, and there was no media coverage of it, or no immediate... The media wasn't called to say, hey, the prince is going to be here and you should cover it. It was just some guy recognizing him and then taking a picture of him and reporting it to the news, which it seemed that way, but that very well could have been an executive at the news team who said, yeah, we won't have cameras there covering it, but let me go meet the prince and I'll bring it back to the newsroom. Who really knows how much work he did aside or outside of the time it took to get the picture, but I'm sounding awfully cynical. Maybe he did a lot of work. Maybe he helped a lot of people by passing out newspapers printed by the homeless. Let's see. Where do I want to go next? Some data on Gen Z from Forbes. Forbes says, selling to Gen Z. This is what they want. Gen Z is not your typical generation. Thanks, Forbes. Here we go. By the way, neither was... What do you mean by was? Neither was the millennial generation. That's discomforting. Okay, they're telling us how each new generation has its own likes and dislikes. Thank you again, Forbes, for your astute observations. Telling us what Gen Z's are. Thank you. That's a third of the article gone. And here we go. Gen Z loves personalization. Womp womp. For all of the marketers reading this article, note that Gen Z will pay for personalization. Not always with money, but instead with their personal data. And then if they start to go homeless, we can help them out. They aren't nearly as protective of their personal data as Gen X and baby boomers. Baby, what? Neither one of them are protective of their personal information. Gen Z pays more attention to brands that create a personalized experience or allow them to create a custom product. Consider the shoe manufacturer that lets its customers design their own shoes, or the cosmetic company that allows its customers to create their own formulas. Offer them a personalized experience and they will go out of their way to do business with you. I doubt this. I highly doubt this. More stats to consider. 50% pay attention to brands that offer personalization and co-creation. 52% look for brands that 52% look for brands that understand them. A brand doesn't understand you, loser. 51% allow brands to create products that reflect their identity. Yes, nothing like telling people who you are by buying a product. Oh, good term here. Gen Z fights injustice through clicktivism. Clicktivism. Social media has made it easy for anyone to have a megaphone that is heard by the world. Older generation... parentheses boomers might protest with sit-ins and picket signs. The younger generation has embraced social media as the place to call attention to what is important to them. Quote, Gen Z is clicking for change. That sounds like a disorder. 29% follow social media accounts on social justice. 26% use social media to voice their opinions. 15% participate in online protests. Many more than 15% change their profile pictures, and that's about the extent of online protests that I can think of. So maybe that stat's a little bit wrong. You could have really pumped that one up. I would like to say the Millennial Media Offensive is officially a social justice production. We advocate for social justice. It just may not be the kind of social justice that the mainstream thinks is the correct social justice, but we are huge advocates for social justice. A lot of people see justice as irony, and we see it as actual just good old justice. So another thing here is Gen Z fights for social inequality. Gen Z is, according to the study, the most ethnically diverse generation in history. Great replacement, anybody. Diversity and inclusion are not just hot topics in the HR department, but some of the hottest topics for this younger generation. 48% consider racism a top global issue. Well, we've got some work to do here at the Millennial Media Offensive because that number is too high. 49% recognize that gender identity can change over time and that those people can become bishops in the Catholic Church. Just kidding, I added that last part. 48% know someone who prefers to be addressed with gender-neutral programs. Little Freudian slip there. Pronouns. Gen Z. Oh, here you go. Here we go. Gen Z engages in metaverse activities. What are these metaverse activities? I don't know of any of these activities. No generational. Okay, they say Gen Z engages, implying that they currently engage in metaverse activities. But the quote, and according to the study, quote, no generation will embrace and shape the metaverse more than Gen Z. So they engage in it, but they're gonna embrace it. That makes no sense. There's nothing to the metaverse yet. Ugh. Okay. Their stats for Gen Z engages in the metaverse. 48% participate in online gaming. 29% created an avatar to use on the metaverse. I think that's just tied to your Facebook account. So through Facebook, you create an avatar. That doesn't mean you're a part of the metaverse. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, I was all wrong. 20% have paid for digital products. It really seems like they could have bumped that number up too. Okay, so Shep Hyken, the genius who wrote this article, finishes it up with, there are approximately 65 million Gen Zs in the U.S., which accounts for almost 20% of the U.S. population. These are your up-and-coming consumers and financial decision makers. They have expectations that are quite different than older generations. While many of today's Gen Zs are still very young as 11 years old, don't think that they aren't making major impact on companies' current and future plans. Okay, so companies are going to go toward this ESG mindset, and they're going to say, my Gen Z told me to. The customer experience will have to change to reflect the values of Gen Z. So, more diverse commercials for the Super Bowl. You hear me out there, marketing agencies? Of course you do. You've been making those ads for years. Their opinions and habits are going to cross over to older generations, especially with their parents who support the young generation's ideals. He essentially just said that Gen X, millennials, and some boomers don't have any convictions about their ideals and what they believe, which is true. Are you ready for a new generation's expectations? If not, it's not too late to start to change. Yes, we must all become Gen Z. We must assimilate with Gen Z. Thank you, Shep Hyken, for absolutely wasting everyone's time. I do have one more Gen Z article, and that was fun, so let's do another one. This is from the Business Scoop. Deloitte's Gen Z and Millennial Survey reveals two generations striving for balance and advocating for change. So this is going to be more of the same. You got to change. You got to be a Gen Zer, or you're just no good. You're not a ideal citizen until we can consider you a member of Gen Z. And, generation knows no age. You can be transgeneration. You should be transgeneration, you old farts. You should all be Gen Z. You should all have a Gen Z mindset. Okay. So, in 2022, both Gen Z and millennials have cited the cost of living as their top personal concern, followed closely behind by racism. That second part was not in there, but I just inferred from the previous article. What else do we have here? Anything other than... Okay, you got to throw in here the climate change continues to be a top concern for both generations. What else do we have here? Okay, this actually gives the methodology of the survey, which I appreciate. Let's see what their methodology was. The responses of 14,808 Gen Z and 8,412 millennials, with 23,220 respondents total from 46 countries. Online self-complete style interview. In addition to the survey, a virtual qualitative assessment was conducted with 15 Gen Z and millennials from Australia, India, Japan, the UK, and the US. Okay, very good. Very good. Everyone must assimilate to become Gen Z. You must become transgenerational. Or you just won't be a good citizen. Cannot remain a boomer, a Gen Xer, or even a millennial and be a good global citizen. Just a couple more stories here for everyone still listening. I haven't checked the troll room in a little while. Let me see. yes, okay. All right, moving along. I am going to start with a little bit of a scuffle in Rapid City, South Dakota. Let's see. Yes, Rapid City, South Dakota. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this absolute legend of a lady. I know I wrote her name down. Yes, I did not. But she's going to be in this article. Let's see. This is Connie Urey. Anyone out there who knows who Connie Urey, U-H-R-E, is, has at one point in their lives enjoyed a very entertaining video of a lady in Rapid City, South Dakota, attacking protesters with a bottle of Pledge cleaning solution. So, back... let's see exactly when this was. When did this happen? When did she attack these protesters with a bottle of Pledge? Oh, well, okay. Maybe it'll be here. Bear with me here, folks. No. Okay, well, back... on May 27th, Connie Urey confronted several protesters and sprayed Sonny Redbear, which is one of the protesters, director of racial equity at NDN Collective, get it, Indian Collective, in the face with a cleaning product. You should go watch this video. It's entertaining. It's very funny. Just because the stature of Connie... And she's walking around, not pleased with the protesters. She wasn't pleased with the protesters because after a killing in her hotel, the Grand Gateway Hotel on March 19th, she, put out a message. Due to the, and she spelled due, D-O, due to the killing that took place at the Grand Gateway Hotel on March 19th, 2022 at 4 a.m., plus all the vandalism we have had since the mayor and police department are working with the nonprofit organization Dark Money, we will no longer allow any Native Americans on property or in the Cheers Sports Bar, she wrote. And this is a tweet, by the way. Natives killing, that was a tweet that I read, and it continues, Natives killing natives. Ranchers and travelers will receive a very special rate of $59 a night. Book direct. Rapid City has gone to hell since the city has been accepting all the free money with strings attached. Look up Dark Money, MacArthur Foundation, and many others. This lady seems like she's done her research and is not happy about the way her city is going, and she seems to believe that this has all led to an increase in violence and a murder in her hotel. And she said that because this murder happened, she would no longer allow natives on her property, the sports bar or the hotel, by the way. And because of this tweet, the NDN filed a civil lawsuit against the hotel. Yes, against the hotel. Her, Connie's son, by the way, Judson Uri, filed a lawsuit against his mother after she issued the tweet, but he has since withdrawn that lawsuit. I mean, this guy really went on he went on the warpath against his mom and his siblings. He even accused his brother of having an affair, his married brother with kids, of having an affair with one of the hotel staff in the lawsuit. But now he's withdrawn those, and it's probably because the NDN, a large organization, has brought suit against the hotel. So, yeah, very interesting happenings in Rapid City, South Dakota. It'll be interesting to keep up with it because Connie, old Connie, she's not very well liked at the moment. Let's see, the killing that happened. Yeah, two natives, one killed, one did the murdering. Yeah. The guy died 16 days after he was shot. Shot with a 40 caliber. Okay, well, anyway. Ooh, here's a good quote. Let's see what the context of this is. The quote is, "She judged him by the color of his skin, not who he was. That woman turned it into a race war." Where does this come from? Okay. Oh, okay, they're talking about Connie. Because Connie banned natives from her hotel, she turned this into a race war after the guy was killed in her hotel. Okay, well, anyway, small town, well, not really small town stuff, but the happenings of Rapid City, South Dakota, brought to you here by the Millennial Media Offensive. Well, for my last story of the night, I think I'm going to go through my list one more time while I filibuster you a bit. Let's see. What all have I covered? What have I not covered? The market has crashed. Newsflash. Okay, let's go to the last story. Last story of the evening. Again, I thank everyone for joining in. But I have to deliver some bad news for some of our listeners out there. Any of you cough syrup enjoyers, you're going to want to listen closely because, well, let me get it open so I can get the full details for you because I know you're listening very intently if you're not on the cough syrup currently. Jurors deny cough syrup defense in road rage killing. A Missouri woman has been convicted in a road rage killing after jurors rejected defense arguments that she suffered from cough syrup induced psychosis. Yeah, this lady rear-ended another person at a red light, and when the person got out of her car at the red light to call the police and report the fender bender, this lady, let's see what her full name is, 50-year-old Elizabeth McCune, 50-year-old Elizabeth McCarron, ran over the lady calling to report the accident. When Foster exited her vehicle, the victim, and called 911 to report the crash, police say McCune backed up, then ran over Foster, dragging her under the vehicle. McCune attempted to drive away but was blocked off at the next intersection by other witness drivers. Good work, witnesses. McCune's attorney... Okay, well, I've got a clip. Let's play the clip and see what it covers. Let's see. Road rage.
But opening statements from the defense claim McCune was unknowingly under the influence of cough syrup. Due to a liver condition, her attorney claims McCune suffered a medication-induced bipolar episode.
Consumption of cough syrup was, again, unknowing, unwitting, involuntary, an accident. She did not deliberately consume cough syrup to get any kind of effect, as in euphoria or high from cough syrup. Her intent was to suppress her cough.
Her intent was to suppress her cough. I can't help but doubt that. I'm aware, and anyone who has any street smarts is aware of how widely cough syrup is abused. And I think this lady was a regular cough syrup abuser. Sad, but don't think you're gonna go out whacked up on cough syrup and and get away with murder because you're whacked up on cough syrup. Not gonna work. Not going to work. You know. With that, I think that's gonna do it for the solo show. I'm not sure exactly how long it'll be, but I think I'm satisfied with what I've covered. Let's see, do I have any ISOs to share? No, I just have the toilet paper ISO that I used earlier. Okay, very good. Very good. Well, I hope you've all enjoyed the solo show. Dan will be back next week, hopefully, and we will do a full Millennial Media Offensive. Podcast. Please donate to the show if you find it valuable in any way. You can email Dan and I at dan@mmo.show and email me at john@mmo.show. And in the absence of my co-host, I would like to leave you with see you next Tuesday.
Let's light some toilet paper on fire!